Our final case for today is Buzinski v. American Airlines. Mr. Foley?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Joe Buzinski has brought this appeal based upon the granting of a summary judgment motion. As you know, when considering a summary judgment motion, all facts, all evidence, all inferences are to be drawn in the favor of the non-moving party. It's Mr. Buzinski's position that the district court did not do that and, in fact, abused its discretion in not doing that. Apparently, the district court took issue with plaintiff's 56.1 submission. Attached to our reply brief is our 56.1 statement of material facts. And as the court sees, it's a 12.5-page document consisting of 40 paragraphs.
But what facts did you think the district court should have looked at that you assert you can support that it did not? The court doesn't ignore your side. The court takes everything and looks at it in the light most favorable to Mr. Buzinski, but maybe not some of the things. But you never really focus on what's missing.
In the court's opinion, it specifically references facts 34 and 35 and 37, 38, 39, and 40. Those are essential material facts going to the issue of causation in this particular case.
But be more specific. I mean, you used all these numbers, and I had trouble seeing what facts you were pointing to that would undermine, at a minimum, the indicators in this record that American wasn't offering a pretextual reason when it fired Mr. Buzinski, that they thought that he had been dishonest with them, that he had talked about these restrictions on his ability to get around, whether to drive or take public transportation, but there he was, you know, in the sports bar and so on, and he wouldn't have even have had to drive to O'Hare for this event. Somebody could have given him a ride, he could have taken a taxi, he could have gotten there in all number of ways. So American, according to what I can see in this record, whether rightly or wrongly, reasonably believed that he was being dishonest with them.
Material fact 34 and 35 address the issue of the PCAF form, the physical capabilities activities form that American prepared, that American gives to the employee to give to their doctor. That, our contention, is a work restriction. The ground employee's injury on duty packet that they give to the employee when they report an injury.
But why does that get to the point that I just made? Suppose he couldn't drive or take public transportation. In other words, take that fact in the light favorable to your client. I don't see why that has anything to do with whether he can get to O'Hare for the hearing.
First of all, the BOI in the hearing is a red herring. There is no policy, procedure, written documentation on the part of American that requires a board of inquiry. Move it back.
But why? What is there in your case that suggests that you can raise an issue of fact on Americans' belief, the honesty of their belief that he was exaggerating his injury and that he, in fact, had been dishonest with them, that he really could drive and he could function, and so he'd been, or do you think companies have some, I don't know what laws that says companies are required to keep people on the payroll who they think are being dishonest.
He was not dishonest.
That's a question. Does American think he was dishonest? It's a different issue.
I don't see how they could think.
Even though the surveillance showed that he was driving after he told them he couldn't drive to O'Malley's, et cetera?
He never said he couldn't drive, Your Honor. He acknowledged in his investigation that he did drive. He admitted on each occasion that he drove, and as Diane Shirley said in her deposition, he testified, or he talked about in the 29F hearing, more instances of driving than she even knew about. He was not restricted from driving his personal vehicle.
Shirley said that he told her that he couldn't attend the Board of Inquiry session because he wasn't allowed to drive.
He wasn't allowed to drive on company property. He wasn't allowed to drive while employed. His doctor put him on very strict restrictions, but they're work restrictions. The very nature of his restrictions didn't allow him to even get out of bed if you construed those restrictions as life restrictions versus work restrictions.
Right.
And yet they insisted on, first of all, on November 6th when he went to the doctor the first time, they knew he was going to the doctor. He told them he was going to the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
And they sent surveillance to videotape him. And then they said, you violated your restriction. Yet those were work restrictions. And he wasn't working. And they knew he was going to the doctor.
But it wasn't just going to the doctor. It's all this other stuff. It's picking his son up. It's, you know,
but again,
recreational
Judge,
activities.
Those were not work activities. He was restricted, as his doctor testified, and as Statement of Fact 39 laid out, his doctor testified that those were work restrictions. He didn't violate the restrictions. Diane Shirley in the 29F here investigation had every opportunity to ask him question after question after question. And at her deposition, when asked and presented with her version of the 29F, which is the only version there is, please show us where Joe Buzynski lied. We even gave her the opportunity to take a break and review the document, and she could not come up with a single lie. And the fact is, he didn't tell any lies.
On that piece of paper, I read that sequence. She's telling you, though, that in a broader sense, he was not being honest with them. I mean, you can call it a work restriction, but if the person says, for example, you know, I can't lift 20 pounds when I'm at work, but then you see them lifting 20 pounds repeatedly, and I'm not saying that's his restriction, I'm just giving you a for instance, at home, then the company can take the position the person's not being honest with them.
The physical restrictions placed upon Joe Buzynski were placed on Joe Buzynski by his physician. He was injured on the 21st of October, went to the doctor on the 22nd. The restrictions were placed upon him on the 22nd. The company had...
Doctors aren't allowed to say that you can only do certain things at home and not the exact same things at work.
Dr. Papineau testified that he didn't want Joe Buzynski driving. The types of machinery that Joe Buzynski drove were fueling trucks, heavy equipment, much different than your personal vehicle. The American Airlines set him up on numerous occasions with the intent to videotape him, with the intent to then use the PCAF form that they drafted, that they put together, that they insisted his doctor prepare, that they knew, at the very least, was ambiguous, and then say, you violated your restrictions because you drove. He never denied that he drove. He admitted that he drove.
Is there any other reason that they would have had to fire him as an employee? Did he have a long record of tardiness or anything? Or
there was no, he had no problems in his
past. American Airlines runs itself by firing perfectly good employees
that pursue
they have a chance?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. They pursue their rights under the Workers' Compensation Act. They pursue work. What other reason would they have to fire the man? He got hurt on the 21st of October. He was fired 30 days later.
But he got his workers' comp benefits, didn't he?
He's still getting them.
Yeah,
to this very day, he's still getting them.
Yeah, right.
But he's no longer an employee. He no longer has the benefit of having a job. They're trying to say they fired him for fraud, misrepresentation, violating his restrictions. There's no fraud. He's still getting his benefits. There is no misrepresentation. Clearly, he was hurt. Everyone that was involved in this decision has testified that they knew he got hurt, that they recognized that he got hurt, that they knew he sought medical treatment, everything under Hinthorn that shows he's pursuing his rights under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act. Starting on the 22nd of October, he's labeled by Leslie Crow, the injury manager from the Work Comp Department, as being a high-risk employee. On November 5th, she says, we're going to initiate surveillance because Joe was injured. No, for no other reason at this point. They didn't have any reason to think that he had done anything wrong, violated any restriction, done anything. But they contact corporate security. Corporate security prepares a report, and the heading on the report is theft. The subheading is work comp fraud. These are preconceived pretextual notions. They had no evidence at that point that there was any theft, that there was any work comp fraud.
Run out of your time in a second.
I'll reserve. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Spangler.
Good afternoon. That is. As to the first issue that Mr. Foley raised, his Rule 56.1 statement, We think this is a fairly straightforward issue. This court has held many times that district courts do not abuse their discretion by requiring litigants to comply strictly with Local Rule 56.1. And the district court specifically stated in her opinion that it wasn't only that there were factual submissions that were too long by not only, quite frankly, the plaintiff, but by the defendant as well, but that the plaintiff had provided only general denials without citations to the record, and that he had relied upon non-responsive evidence and improper factual characterizations. And I'd like to just turn the court's attention to one issue that is similar to this that was raised in Mr. Buzinski's reply brief to this court, which raises a similar issue as the district court raised in its opinion. And that is, Mr. Buzinski repeatedly states that American accused him of obtaining a benefit to which he was not entitled, namely workers' compensation. And he says that on pages 1, 2, 4, and 5 of his mere 7-page reply brief. There is not a single citation to the record for that proposition, and it, in fact, doesn't exist anywhere in the record. And these were the kinds of issues that the district court raised in ruling that many of his submissions were not proper. Judge Conlon did not abuse her discretion in requiring Mr. Buzinski to comply with Local Rule 56.1 or by refusing to credit his submissions that ran afoul of that local rule. And then secondly, on the issue of whether the district court viewed the evidence in the light most favorable to Mr. Buzinski, of course, American's position is that it did. It considered all the facts that it believed that the parties had submitted appropriately and ruled that American had a legitimate non-pretextual reason for discharging Mr. Buzinski, namely that he had lied to his supervisors when he said that he could not attend the Board of Inquiry because he could not drive and he could not take public transportation, when, as it turned out, he himself did not believe that his restriction prevented him from driving his own personal vehicle, and his doctor never told him that he could not take public transportation or otherwise get to the BOI.
And just I don't know that necessarily goes to the ultimate issue in this case. Probably doesn't, but I thought it was sort of odd that you call out surveillance of somebody who was on the workers' comp just such a short time after the injury. And I would think that you would only do that if somebody had a bad history, as Judge Wood asked about, or you smelled a rat somewhere. Because American Airlines is a big company. How can they? They must, I'm sure, get a number of workers' comp claims. Why did they do that here?
Because in this case, the issue wasn't that he was receiving any sort of benefits pursuant to workers' comp. It was
I told... what the claim is, but I'm just wondering, just in the real world, why did they call out the surveillance dogs to follow this guy around and videotape him?
Because they wanted to determine whether or not he had been telling Diana Shirley the truth, that he couldn't come into this BOI because he simply couldn't get there. He couldn't drive. He couldn't take public transportation. So they wanted to determine, is that true? Could he have gotten here? Is he being untruthful? Diana Shirley, quite frankly, did not believe him when he said that. It didn't make sense to her.
Was the surveillance initiated before or after that phone call?
The November 6th phone call?
That's the phone call where he says he can't come in because...
Oh, it was initiated after. Diana Shirley actually had several... she contacted Mr. Buzinski several times before the actual BOI, which was on November the 7th. Mm-hmm. And she also spoke to individuals who were at Mr. Buzinski's house prior to that time. So it was only upon speaking with Mr. Buzinski prior to even the November 6th phone call where his union steward was present, and he had said, I can't come into the BOI because I can't drive and because I can't take public transportation, that she then became suspicious and said, this doesn't sound right to me, and I think that we should investigate this further.
So the triggering lie is that November 7th, or is it November 6th, phone call where he says he can't come in for the hearing?
It was actually prior to that. And then, then there was a November 6th call where his union steward was present, where she then confirmed, okay, you can't come, are you sure you can't come in to the BOI in person, because that's the way that we prefer to do it? And again, he says, yes, I can't come in. I have a zero for drive and walking. And she says, okay, then tomorrow we will have the BOI over the phone.
But why then Does American list his status as terminated slash resigned as of November 5, 2007?
There's really no
document in the record that says that.
There is a document in the record that says that. That document, however, is unauthenticated. There's not a single person at American Airlines who said they authored the document. They know what the document is. It could be a clerical error. We have no idea, and the plaintiff didn't develop any facts to show the court what that document is.
I mean, it's troublesome given all of this because it suggests that American had, as Mr. Foley suggests, you know, figured people who need to go on workers' comp, of course, affect, you know, your insurance rates depend on how many claimants you have, and companies have to have workers' comp coverage, of course, but it doesn't mean they like it, and maybe they decided that, and Mr. Buczynski had a number of other workers' comp claims, had he not?
Well, he had 5 previous work injuries, which, quite frankly, none of the decision makers in this case, certainly George Thorne and Diana Shirley, they did not know about those prior injuries. But to your point, Your Honor, I'm not quite sure.
I just wonder, you know, should we disregard this November 5th document so readily? I understand what you're saying about authentication, but on the other hand, the timing is very suspicious.
But that document is not connected to anyone who is connected to this case. There's no evidence that shows that George Thorne either authored the document or had somebody author it or told anybody about it. There's no evidence that Diana Shirley did the same. There's no evidence that Leslie Crowe, who Mr. Foley likes to bring up in this, had anything to do with that document. In fact, she affirmatively testified that she did not. She wasn't even in the role anymore at the time that document was created. So there's really
a document that you produced to him? I mean, he must have found it somehow.
We produced the document.
Is there an authenticated document in the record with his actual termination date on it?
Yes.
And that reflects what date?
November the 20th, 2007. It's also in his complaint.
2006, right.
2007.
Seven. Yes. Okay. Right. Yeah, that's just a typo.
And I'd just like to also address quickly a few points that Mr. Foley made. He did state that his client never said that he couldn't drive. In fact, his client did say that he couldn't drive. He said that repeatedly. And he has now changed that around and said, well, what he really meant was that he simply couldn't drive at work, or he couldn't drive work vehicles. And if that were the case, that still wouldn't explain why he told Diana Shirley that he couldn't drive his own personal vehicle to the BOI. It just really doesn't make sense. He also says that Diana Shirley said that he did not, meaning Mr. Buczynski, didn't lie to her in the 29F hearing. The purpose of the 29F hearing wasn't to see if Mr. Buczynski would lie in the 29F hearing. The purpose of the 29F hearing was to determine whether or not he had been untruthful to the company prior to that time, and that is what the company ultimately determined. He also makes reference to these work restrictions and that a Dr. Papanos claimed that these restrictions only applied at work. There's a few things there. Number one, plaintiff testified that Dr. Papanos was not his doctor. Dr. Varma was his doctor. Dr. Varma actually was not available that day that he went to see Dr. Papanos. Dr. Papanos specifically said, I am not changing your restrictions and I'm not telling you to do anything different than what your primary treating physician is doing here. And in his testimony, Dr. Papanos pretty much stopped short and said, you know, I can't say whether or not these restrictions apply outside of work. Dr. Varma, on the other hand, said these restrictions, in fact, did apply all the time. There was no distinction between work and not work. The point here was to get him well. And the final point is Mr. Foley mentions that the company was trying to set up Mr. Buczynski, and he references that in various places in his briefs. That is rank speculation. There's simply no evidence in the record that American, George Thorne, or Mr. Harrington, or anyone else involved here was attempting to set him up for anything. The record here is that there are no genuine issues of material fact, and that the opinion of the district court and the decision of the district court should stand.
Okay, thanks. Anything further, Mr. Foley?
Your Honors, was he set up? On November 8th at 10:30 in the morning, Joe Buzinski got a call from Leslie Crowe, the injury manager, and said, you need to get to the doctor and you need to have a PCAF form completed. She has one dated November 5th, 3 days earlier, with his restrictions on it. His restrictions hadn't changed. Joe said, I went to the doctor on the 6th. The doctor gave me some prescription. He didn't change my restrictions. But she said, you need to go to the doctor on the 8th, and we need to have that PCAF form by 1 o'clock. She gave him 2.5 hours. Anything that man did following that telephone conversation would be a violation of restrictions because he was placed on no walking restrictions, no sitting, no standing, including no driving. If someone drove him to the doctor's office, he violated those restrictions. If he got himself to that doctor's office somehow, he violated restrictions. When he got to the doctor's office, two members of corporate security were there with video cameras. He did exactly what he was told, because if he didn't do it, he'd be fired for insubordination. He gave them the document. He can't make the doctor fill it out. They didn't get that document until November 15th, but that wasn't an issue. They didn't care about the form. They only wanted him there. Reasonable inferences are drawn in the favor of the non-moving party, and that wasn't done here. George Thorne testified in his deposition that...
Okay, you need to wrap up, Mr. Foley.
Just the final. George Thorne testified that if Mr. Buzinski drove to his doctor's office, that was not a violation of his restrictions. If he drove to follow Leslie Crowe's recommendations, that was not a violation of his restrictions. He didn't lie to anyone. There was no misrepresentation. There was no fraud. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess.